Peter R. Bregan, M.D., is called the conscience of psychiatry for his many decades of successful reform efforts. His scientific and educational work provide the foundation for modern criticism of drugs and ECT, and lead the way in promoting more caring and effective therapies. His books include Talking Back to Prozac, Toxic Psychiatry, Medication Madness, Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal, and now, Guilt, Shame, and Anxiety, Understanding and Overcoming Negative Emotions. Welcome to the Dr. Peter Bregan Hour.
Hello, 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 my wonderful audience. I am really glad to be back today. Some of you who follow me more closely will notice we haven't put up a radio TV show in a couple of weeks. And the reason for that is that our internet connectivity became so slow and irregular that when I tried to do a wonderful show with a psychologist, Howie Glasser, who's a dear friend, it was a great talk. We enjoyed talking with each other and with his partner, Denise, but it just didn't work out. So as a result of that, I have not been doing any shows for a couple of weeks. And we have it down now, I think, in a whole new way that is going to enable us to edit and to control things better. PRN, my wonderful radio studio, which has been recording me for decades and as a radio show, and it's given me permission to use it as a video show. They were recording on Skype from their end. Well, they are now sequestered at home, so they can only do recordings. But we have figured out how to do this with my wonderful assistant, Ian. And Ian is actually recording this at home. And so he is now not only my editor, as he has been for a long time in many different ways, he's now my engineer. And he will be recording this, and then we will be sending it to the radio station. How about all those details? All of this about handling the coronavirus. And the radio station will be able to put it up from home. And you'll be hearing me on the radio, and you'll be hearing me on, seeing me on YouTube, the Dr. Peter Bregan Hour radio and TV. Well, I had a thought that I wanted to begin with, which is, by any standard, I'm an older man now. I'm 83. I'm one of those people who is really vulnerable. I live with my wife, Ginger. She's 69, and with her mother, whom we love much, Jean, who's 93. And I want to thank America for going through all the pain and suffering now that you are, of distancing yourselves and isolating yourselves, largely really to protect your older population, of which the three of us, me and Ginger and her mom Jean, are really older members. You're doing a lot of this to protect older people. So next time somebody tells you that, you know, you don't care about this group or that group, you know, that you're somehow bad because you're prejudiced, just think about what you, America, has been doing, because it has really struck me so strongly that you are protecting me and my closest family, and you're doing that all over the country for your families. You're doing it for my family. So I want to thank America and to tell you that in all the TV watching I've been doing and all of the other social media that Ginger keeps track of, we haven't heard resentment of protecting older people. This is a good country. You are good folks. We are good folks. And I'm so glad to be back addressing all of you, sharing with all of you at this point in time. I thought I would talk today about communicating. We are all of us, most of us, certainly in very tight-knit circumstances with loved ones, with friends, with family we may have difficulties with. There's concerns about people getting abusive to one another and getting depressed and getting anxious. And all of that has to do with the quality of communication in your household, between you and your loved ones and your friends and people you're not so comfortable with, and also your relationships on the phone and on Skype and on social media of all kinds. So I wanted to give you several principles of basic communication. And I'm not even sure whether I will cover them all or cover one of them in this video, because although I have a bunch of notes, I'll be talking from my heart about what I've learned about communication. Now, the first theme, which is going to take up a good piece of what we're talking about today, I want to read so I get it right. And it's leave your guns at the door and no fist fights. All right, does that apply to you? Well, it may. I hope it doesn't directly apply to you. But the principle of leave your guns at the door and no fist fights, which is an old Western movie concept. I don't know if it was ever a real issue. I don't know if that's what they did in the old Western days. But the idea of leaving your guns at the door and no fist fights is beautifully applied to all of our conversations, all of our exchanges of words, all of our gestures, if we see the subtleties, because in order for us to have good communication, in order for us to have caring communication, we have to let go of being aggressive, hostile, defensive, angry, ridiculing, making fun of, teasing. We have to let go of anything that the other person may feel is in some way oppressive. And you know, some folks get used to being treated like that. So it's up to us, with our loved ones, with all the people we deal with, to notice if they feel that something we're saying, our gesturing, way we're behaving, is somehow threatening on some level. So at the start, I want to help you let go of the things that interfere with communication. I'm going to give you a personal example to start with, so you don't think I'm coming from some, you know, I know it all or I'm superior position here, because these are principles I have to work to live with, to have a wonderful and good relationship with the people that are close to me. I have to think about these things all the time, and especially more recently. Because when we became sequestered, and even before that, really, this goes back to before that, when Ginger's mom came to live with us. I'm a psychiatrist, psychotherapist. I should have anticipated that, of course, that would place stresses on Ginger far beyond stresses on me. I've always had a very easy relationship with her mom. I didn't anticipate having a lot of difficulty. But of course, for both Ginger and mom, suddenly living together 2 years ago, we had to take her at her request, out of a very difficult situation, bring her to live with us. It was a rescue mission. And Ginger had a lot of feelings about some things that had gone on in her life earlier, and they were being re-stimulated. And a lot of them to do with her dad, who was no longer with us. And I began to feel like she was seeing me in a wrong light. I began to feel like, you know, that she was seeing me too much as her dad and stuff like that. So I started to feel irritable and angry. And this created a terrible cycle in which I began to look more like her dad, and she would get more and more anxious, and it was not going well for a while. And suddenly I drew on what I know, my feelings of love for her, my understanding of myself, and my own way of handling things with anger growing up and protecting myself growing up. And I said to her, out of the blue, I said, Ginger, I'm going to change. I'm going to absolutely change the way I've been behaving for a few weeks now. I'm just not going to get angry. I'm not going to get irritable with you. I am going to get back to who I really am, which is the man who loves you and knows you love me. I'm just going to set all of this stuff aside, and I'm going to be the loving person that I am for you, dear. That's what I'm going to do. And I pretty much have managed it. What was so beautiful was the instantaneous, practically, change in Ginger. All of a sudden, the defensiveness about me that I had been feeling was gone. She trusted me to change, and she was so happy that I had made the change. It was dramatic, and it got us back on our way of being with each other, which is a very loving and caring and good way. And her mom has grown along with us and learned how we relate, and she's just a major partner now, especially in the fun and the laughter and the play, because she's really good at that. She loves to laugh, and she does it very nicely together in this relatively tight circumstances. So there was an example where I realized that my growing irritability was making her more and more anxious, more defensive, and I had to simply stop. And when I stopped and I was aware enough to say what I was doing, she instantly forgave me, and just immediately the defensiveness began to drop. There can be moments like this in anyone's life. This is what I do in therapy with couples. I help them spot what's interfering with the loving communication, what is intimidating the other person. Now, some of this can be very dramatic. And so I'll talk a little bit about that in the beginning. Men in particular, you know, physically threaten women. Our very size, our very nature can be physically threatening to the people we love. There's hardly a woman on earth who hasn't been physically threatened by a man in one way or another, and many are continually threatened by their husbands, even their male children, because there's such an imbalance of power. And on occasion, at the start of a session, a first session or second session, I'll see that the woman is suddenly, you know, become very quiet about what she's saying, and I'll look over at the husband and he'll be looking stern, or in a worst case situation he may be flexing his fist or something, and I'll just intervene. I'll say, I think I'm seeing something that goes on a lot, and I'll address the man and I'll say to him, first of all, you just can't hit your wife anymore. It should end today. I want an agreement here that she has the right to call the police if you ever hit her again. And it's just got to end. That's good news for you, Joe. It's really, really good news for you, because you're going to learn through being kind and gentle, you're going to get more from your wife than you ever imagined existed. And you're going to get what you really want, which you didn't even know you really wanted, which is to be loved. She will be able to love you. But you must let go of this, and you must promise. The kinds of people who come to me are motivated. And it's not like I work magic. I couldn't do this very easily in many kinds of outpatient clinics, for example. But in a private practice, people are motivated. And people change. They change the dynamic. They give up whatever it is that they're doing that is threatening. Now, as a part of giving up all threats, you have to, and you want to start over again. This is going to give you a chance during this isolation that we're all experiencing to change your lives. So you give up all threatening things. Find out from the person you're with what threatens them the most. Find out from your kids what threatens them the most. With your kids, it's probably an angry look, but it might be you stopping talking, or you looking like you don't know what to say and you're fed up with them. It may be goodness knows what. If you've hit them in the past, then it's going to be that. And they may not even remember. You may remember. You may remember that you used to spank them. They may not. You have to remember anything that looks physically threatening and just turn off all the love and all the relationship. I'm at home, so you're going to hear a little background noise. That's my dog, Sherry, who's a Shetland sheepdog, all 32 pounds of her, like kind of a miniature collie, but they're stouter looking in their snouts. We could hear chiming in from the other two dogs along the way. In relationships, you have to put aside, if you're going to improve them, you have to make a promise. There'll be no discussion of divorce. I ask couples who come to me if they want to really stay together. If they say yes, I say, well, let's put a six-month moratorium. Whether you're seeing me or not, I mean, folks, this should be going on whether you're coming to me or not. And if you quit or whatever, find another therapist, you still should do this if you're going to succeed. Put a six-month moratorium on all threats. So, Jane, you can't threaten to go to your mother's. Joe, you can't threaten to get a divorce. In fact, you can't leave the house in a huff as if God knows what you're going to do on your way out or when you're driving. So you have to find all the threatening things you do with each other, and you have to stop doing them. I want you to just mull on that for a little bit. I'll kind of look at what I'm thinking about here, too. The nature of threats can be surprising to people. For example, many men are devastated when their wives cry. Then it becomes important to distinguish what kind of crying is it, and really the person who cries, you should have a discussion with them. Are they crying in anger? Then that, of course, is scary. Are they crying because they feel hurt? Is it a vulnerable expression of their being hurt? Are they crying out of relief? Are they crying because something you've talked about has brought up some ancient history, has nothing to do with you? So women, be careful of your crying, because it may be perceived as somehow very threatening, like they've hurt you, they made the girl cry, now they made their mother cry. My God, if your husband made your mother cry, his mother cry, if she was depressed and she would cry at the kids, with the kids and stuff, well, then you have to learn to understand that, and you both got to work on it. The man has to get used to what genuine crying is, that's not manipulative or threatening or necessarily angry, but is an expression of feeling hurt and feeling vulnerable. And you work it out and you talk about it. But women in the audience, remember that men are extremely susceptible. And of course, so are women in gay relationships. All these principles, by the way, in my experience, apply to gay relationships, to straight relationships, to any kind of relationship, not necessarily even romantic relationships. They happen at work, they happen everywhere. So what I'm talking to you about is not just the close, romantic, intense, and family relationships. I deal with lots of lawyers. One of the nice things about being sequestered is that I'm not getting so many calls for lawsuits, and I have wanted to back off from that work. But working with lawyers can be very, very difficult. Some of them are terrific, of course, and some of them are pretty stressed out and angry folks. And all these principles apply. They all apply. And I've been focusing at this point on understanding what you do that may be threatening to the other person, and how to, in a way, also, if we're talking about angry relationships, of just detoxifying the entire relationship by not participating from your direction in whatever behavior aggravates, upsets, and threatens the other person. Now, you might feel very vulnerable here. You might say, oh my God, you mean I'm going to let my husband determine what of my behavior threatens him? Or I'm going to let my wife or my kids? Well, in a way, yeah. Yeah, when we have loving relationships, one of the things we do is we pay as much attention or more to the other person's feelings as to our own. So if you find that something you routinely do or unconsciously do or have always done, or that makes you feel good, like teasing, or like making a joke about how big and strong you are or something, or joking about you can always leave or whatever, you're just grimacing or crying or not talking, be very threatening to another person, yeah, out of love you begin to adjust it. Now this brings about a miracle. If you begin to control everything you do in terms of getting rid of the stuff that angers and upsets the people you're dealing with, that threatens them, I like the word threatens them, makes them feel vulnerable, makes them feel unloved, uncared for, disrespected. Disrespect is very important. If you want to have love, you got to have respect. Respect is in many ways what I'm talking about, how to have a respectful relationship. I'll talk in part two, perhaps. We'll see how this runs. But in part two, about loving communication. Right now, I'm talking about respectful communication where you learn very much as if you were in a foreign culture what is offensive to the person that you're living with, being with, talking with, on the phone with, working with. I hope this makes sense. If you get this and you haven't understood it before, and frankly, I am continually losing track of it myself. So, I mean, I've got my own habits. Teasing is one of them that is not always the best at all. And I try to only tease myself. But even that can get confusing to sensitive people. Who are you really teasing? So keep it in mind that if you have a caring and loving relationship, then, or even just if you want a respectful one. So I have to keep coming back to that because that's a kind of a new insight for me to really focus on this as the respect issue. Hi, folks. I just took a little break. And during that break, my assistant Ian brought up the evidence that is accumulating for how difficult it is for people to be sequestered together at this time, and is very relevant to what I'm teaching, instructing, sharing, reminding myself about and relearning with you today as I'm going over them, what I feel are the most important issues in communication and having good, rational, loving communication. Ian mentioned to me that there are reports in China of greatly increased divorces following people being put together for long periods of time. People aren't accustomed with it. They don't know how to deal with it. But further than that, you can actually make it a better time. You can learn to love each other more. I hope, in fact, we'll find out in retrospect there are more babies. That doesn't necessarily mean love, of course, but that we love each other more during this time because we have uninterrupted, and in some ways could be less stressful depending on the family situation. Times together could be much more stressful. And in the U.S., of course, we have data that the suicide hotlines are getting many, many more calls. And so are some of the lines for domestic abuse. And so these, what I'm talking about today, it can help you in general with all of your communications, but especially you could put them into application to stressful living and turning it into loving living, rational, ethical, loving. You'll notice that I don't talk a lot about just express your feelings. Even in therapy, when I'm conducting therapy, I don't encourage people to express just what they feel beyond a certain point. if what they're expressing is uncontrolled helplessness, where they're rageful at somebody, doesn't even have to be me, it's just not good for them, or themselves, or their loved ones, or God. Helplessly condemning, feeling angry, feeling rageful is just not good for people. We want to recognize anger as indicating we feel injured. And that's another thing I wouldn't doubt that some people hearing the first part about stopping your aggressive behaviors, learning and identifying what your aggressive behaviors are, and in particular, what are the behaviors you have that threaten other people? It's more important than what you think is threatening, what threatens other people so that you can stop them, whether it's a smirk, whether it's a clenched fist, whether it's looking like you're going to run away and leave the house, whether it's ridicule, whether it's stopping talking, whether it's getting up and leaving, whatever it is, whether it's a subtle tone of voice that you don't even understand or recognize, that the person who's dealing with you recognizes, that we learn to let go of these things, to discuss them openly. Well, again, you can see that my emphasis is on reasonable, ethical, rational, loving communication. It's not on just saying what's on your mind. Human beings, we leave so much to be desired. I mean, we are so conflicted. And all ancient stories, whether it's the Bible or classical literature, goes back to how much we leave to be desired. We have to work hard to be loving, rational, and ethical. That matter of reading Plato and Aristotle of the Old Testament. We have to work so hard on being loving and ethical. And that's what this is about. So that's step one that I'm emphasizing to begin with, and perhaps is in some ways the most important, and I'm calling it respect, respectful relating. And when we're respectfully relating, we are thinking at all times about any potential negative impact on the other person. You say, well, you're coddling them. You know, you're loving them and you're being respectful toward them. For those of you who think this is like unmanly behavior, hey guys, I got news for you. All the strongest people I know are basically gentle human beings. And there are some very good people who haven't necessarily come to grips with that, and it harms them and it harms other people. So maybe they're 95% good and they're doing great work and they're great husbands and wives, but they really think that there's a level on which they deserve to be able to be rough or angry or confrontational or tell people to get their act together or whatever else. That's the part that doesn't work. I've thought back over my entire therapy practice, and I don't think, I'd like to make believe it weren't so, but I don't think my spontaneously getting irritable or angry has ever helped anyone. I don't even think getting consciously angry, let alone spontaneously or determinedly irritable or angry with any has ever helped. It's always been much better if I've been able to say, hey, please, that's hurting my feelings, or hey, if you talk to me that way, it's really hard for me to maintain myself in a way that's valuable to you. So let's see what we can figure out to get our communications back down to a really good level where we're being respectful toward each other. And I always want to be respectful toward you. Even if you're not being respectful toward me, I'm going to do my best to be respectful toward you because I believe that's how we should behave. Now, in the last 20 or 30 years as I've gotten older, which brings automatically a certain amount more respect, but also some disrespect. Little bit, I get a little bit of disrespect, little ageism. I tease people back about it, maybe, but hopefully with, about me. You know, I say, well, you know, I'm not that old. I can even text with you. So here I'm very spontaneously just kind of letting myself think about what happens in therapy in particular. And I really try to always be respectful. doesn't mean I always succeed, but I really always try to be respectful. And then we get to the caring and the loving part. But before going there, I want to talk about something that in my books, and my best book for all of this, there are two books, Guilt, Shame, and Anxiety, and The Heart of Being Helpful. Guilt, Shame, and Anxiety, and The Heart of Being Helpful. And I'm going to ask Ian, who's my engineer today and always, to put that up on the film. It's The Heart of Being Helpful and Guilt, Shame, and the book Guilt, Shame, and Anxiety. Overcoming Your Negative Emotions is the subtitle. Understanding and Overcoming Your Negative Emotions. So we have the right to ask of other people that they treat us well. That's the unconditional right to self-defense. We have an unconditional right, I think, to say to one of our patients, as a doctor, please, I know that you're upset and angry and you've had a hard time today, but I'm on your side. I really am. Let's see if we can just work on that assumption. But as I started to say, I've noticed in recent years, I don't have confrontations with the people who come to see me. Partly is they're very self-selected. Most of them know me. They come believing in me, having trust or faith, and particularly wanting to see me. But in general, everywhere I go, because my manner has become gentle and kind, basically, waitresses, waiters, when we used to go to restaurants, they treat me and Ginger very much so. I mean, I'll be sitting in a diner and waitress will come over who's known us both on and off for quite a while, and she'll just start telling Ginger something really personal and asking her for advice because I'm sitting there thinking, hey, I'm no therapist. I don't say it. And Ginger, just because of her manner, her openness, her respectfulness, just invites people. She's not as outgoing as I am in some ways in those settings. She is very outgoing, more than me in other settings. But in public, I might be a little more outgoing. But people just come to her because they see there's a respectfulness about her for them in their opening conversations. So you work on this stuff, and it's going to change your life. It's going to make things better in just about everything you do. And once again, I want to come back to the anger issue, because it's so in us that getting angry is good. We used to, in the 60s, we used to be taught to beat pillows and smack each other with soft objects as a part of letting out anger. It didn't work at all. It just encourages anger. It gets us used to expressing anger. Better than expressing anger is to express the underlying discomfort or hurt. And if you express anger towards somebody, keep in mind that you're really telling them, and you might well make it open, that you're threatened by them. And similarly, it's best to just come out and just say, hey, even if you must say, I find myself getting angry, I don't think I'm feeling safe right now in this conversation. That gives the other person a much better chance to stop the cycle and to contemplate on what they are doing. And occasionally, certainly in business situations, you may come across somebody who just doesn't respond to that, and you have to make a very serious decision about whether you want to work with them. I don't work with people in business situations. In therapy situations, I'll just keep working with somebody, because I feel like that's the one place where they deserve somebody really, really, really overcoming the cycle and showing them the cycle can be ended. But that's not my job in a business situation, working with tradespeople. Almost never. I haven't had a problem working with tradespeople since 25 years, probably, in that sense of the word, in that way. Ginger handles them beautifully. This really is a way you can be with people. I really want to emphasize that. And be this way with the people that you're stuck with now due to the coronavirus. Just be that way with folks. Now I'm going to come up with what is essentially the second principle. Thus far, we've been talking about respect. And the second principle is really a whopper. Here it is. The second principle is to make all your words advance the conversation and the relationship. So I'm trying to do that as I do a video. I do that when I chat with Ian in between, if anything's gone wrong. I try to do it with Ginger. I try as much as I can. I try to do it with the dogs. Because most of us know that anger who just scares dogs, it doesn't really result in cooperative behavior, which dogs are so willing to do if they understand. And most of us as humans are, we're really willing to cooperate if we understand and if we don't feel threatened. So think about that. We don't feel threatened. We understand. Most of us are willing to be real cooperative with each other. So I try to think about, let's say I want somebody I love to change their behavior in some way. Maybe I feel neglected. Maybe I feel I need a little more attention. Maybe I need to explain that I'm not feeling very well and let the other person get it further. I need to think about it as advancing the relationship. I need to think about it as improving communication, which is one and the same with advancing the relationship. So I might consciously just say, how are you doing, Ginge? I've talked to you in a little while, and she might say, well, you know, I've had a stomach ache this morning, and the whole conversation changes. Now I understand why I haven't gotten the attention, because I've thought about her, the relationship, how much I care about her. We can always find ways, pretty much, to advance the relationship. We can talk about how much we love the other person. I don't think you can tell somebody you love them too many times in a day. I don't think it's possible. Unless, of course, they find it's getting artificial and they say, I'm a little uncomfortable and you've told me you love me 5 times in the last hour and I don't know what's going on. I'm thinking of maybe Ginger saying that to me and I might think, uh-oh. What am I telling her that 5? Oh, I feel badly because I made a mess or something. Or I'm feeling badly because I haven't taken the time to spend with her that I know she needs right now. But think about how it would change everything for you. Because not too many people are doing this. And I mean, even for me, I have to remind myself how much it changes everything for me because it's not easy. So just keep in mind and imagine if every word you speak. So if the dog is barking and making you feel crazy, that happens in this house with me. Ginger's little dog, her little 4-pound Yorkie, has a voice that sounds like, maybe the Greek furies who chased people who were being bad. I think that's what they did, or at least they thought were being bad. And if Ginger steps out from the house into the garage for a minute and doesn't reassure the Yorkie first, because the Yorkie has learned to accept that kind of reassurance, and I'm reading or more likely talking to mom or relaxing, I can get really mad. And I can yell at the dog. I do that. But every time I do that, it's going to start with mom. It's going to scare the dog. And it's going to upset Ginger. She doesn't like her dog being yelled at. And Ginger then feels bad that she forgot to quiet the dog down before she left. So I work really hard. This is one of my minor trials in life compared to other people's. One of my minor trials cooped up. I try not to get really upset when the dog's barked and the little one starts it. And then Sherry has her sort of medium bark. And then the big one goes, this huge woof. That's mom's. Lassie dog, big girl with a big deep woof. But none of it is like the Yorkie. So again, it's work to figure out is what you're doing advancing the relationship. I may scare and shut up the Yorkie temporarily, but it actually helps a lot more if I go over and remind her, you know, use your indoor voice or quiet. Just my presence with the dogs, knowing they've been barking, tends to calm them down. I just have to be patient with them. If your child is making a lot of noise and is bothering you, all these principles apply even more intensely. Or if your husband's getting stir crazy, they apply more intensely. Think of something to say that's loving and reassuring. Maybe take a break. Let's take a break together. Hopefully you don't live in one room. If you do with several people, maybe you have to tell people you're going to quietly take a break in the corner. But very few, I hope, of my listeners are in that situation. Take a break. Sit on the porch. Go into the bedroom. And try to address the stress and the anger in a way that is calculated. Here's the big difference: to advance the relationship. So maybe you sit down and you take your child's hand and say, no, no, honey, I'm not going to get angry. I'm not even angry. I'm sorry that sometimes I get angry, like, so that you're nervous. No, I just wanted to just calm us down together. And you are such a good kid. Tell people all the good things. Tell it to them all the time. I'm going to have my psychologist friend, Howie Glasser, back on to talk about this in more detail, because Howie's so good at it. But we want to bring out the greatness in our children, remind them of their goodness. So remind your loved ones and your family of how good they are. Remind your partners, your assistants, your helpers. Even now, when you may only be talking to them on the phone or texting them, remind them that they mean a lot to you. Make that a substantial part of all your communications, and you'll get back these really cute little texts when you text in that way. I'm trying to think about some more ways to make this concrete for you. It really means that you stop and you think. I've had people say in therapy and outside of therapy, if I listen to what you're saying, I'm going to have to think every time I speak. And I say, yes, of course. In the beginning, you're going to have to think hard every time before you speak, because you're breaking lifelong habits, the two of you being angry at each other. You're breaking a long habit of coming out with critical remarks about your son or your daughter. Or you've been yelling in the house. Yeah, you stop and think. And what you think about is good stuff, that you want to be a kind, caring, loving human being. Because we humans are not necessarily that way at all. With great ease, with the slightest encouragement, we teeter on giving up all our ideas about being kind and loving and gentle. So we've got to work at it. We absolutely have to work at it. So that's the second lesson, all your words and thoughts, the second principle, however you want to view it, part two. All your words and thoughts, let them be caring, let them advance the relationship, let them be loving. Be willing to tell someone you love them so many times that they finally say, well, that's enough right now. Really? It will rarely happen if you're being in touch with them, because if you're looking at their face, you'll see whether they're getting pleasure. So that's how you know if you're being kind and loving. You keep your eye on the other person's face. You know, people who have been abused keep their eye on other people's faces all the time, looking for the slightest glint of anger. So keep that in mind, that if you've been abused, that's what you're looking for. Or if your loved ones have been abused, your children have been abused, maybe by somebody else, they're looking for anger, something threatening. Well, encourage people to look for the love, say to your husband, look at the love in my eyes. Don't look away, dear. It's okay. It's safe. Look at the love. Let's look at the love in each other's eyes. I don't recommend necessarily you have a 5-minute love looking. I mean, that's, we used to do things like that in the 60s. But just, you know, gently remind. Ginger does that with me. She'll, if I get down into some pit I'm about to descend into, she'll say, hey, honey, look at me. And I'll tell you, I'd have to be pretty far down to look at her and not remember all the love over 35 years. I mean, I was a goner the moment I set eyes on her. And it's a good goner stuff, let me tell you. It's a good goner stuff. I want to give you some very practical advice toward the end. And that is, if you're having a problem with another person that you need to discuss, it's a fabulous principle. It's a life-changing principle to learn to talk about one person and one problem at a time. To talk about one person, one problem at a time. So if your husband is upset with you, sit down and say, okay, let's really focus on this. I mean, you can say, let's make it one problem, one person, if you want, or just say, let's focus on this. Tell me what's going on. And then you listen, because it's their problem. This is one of the most important principles that happens naturally, I hope, in most therapies. The therapist focuses, at least at times in the therapy, on one person, one problem, and the other person does the talking. And then when you speak, it's only to address helping their problem. Go back to all the first principles. First, you're not going to say anything threatening. And I can say, but you're worse, or you did it first, or you started it, or now you know what I'm living with, anything like that. You're quiet. If you're going to be aggressive, you're quiet, you say nothing. And then when you can advance the relationship, you might say, you know, I'm understanding this in a way I never have before. Or could you tell me a little bit, I'm a little confused about this. You just try to understand one person, one problem at a time. And you could, in the beginning especially, say and that you would like to do the one, you'd like to talk about how you feel about it later on. You may find there's no need to, because it's changed by your simply listening and asking the person to explain. I don't even know why that works so well. I mean, I've been doing this forever, but it works so well. I mean, I can make up a lot of reasons why, and I'm sure some of them have been correct, but I can just tell you the miracle, that if you listen in a loving, caring way, making no threatening statements at all, focusing completely on the other person and this one problem they're trying to talk about, and you ask them questions about it, you tell them your understanding, you let them know it's that you like hearing their talking. And you may find the person begins to actually cry and have feelings with you. Then afterward they might look awkward and embarrassed, and then you have to say, I love hearing your feelings, because you will have loved hearing their feelings, because you've been good. You have been interested, patient, you've been looking at them, not looking away, not looking upset, paying attention. One person, one problem. It is a miracle formula. Changes marriages, it helps therapists. It's right up there at the top with, you know, recognizing when you're being defensive or angry and upset and not going there, and with making all of your communications, advancing of the relationship, end of communication. And then right behind it is one person, one problem at a time. Just think about it. Imagine that the next time your child is upset, if you think, okay, I'm going to help my child focus on what it is that's bothering them. I might explain one person, one problem, maybe at a later time, but right now I'm going to do it. And later I can explain it. I'm going to do it. I'm going to listen to them. I'm not going to tell them how I feel. So if my child says, I got very upset with you this morning, you don't say, well, honey, I'm trying to get everybody out to school. You say, well, tell me. Tell me. Well, you said something terrible to me in the bedroom when you were trying to get him up. Maybe your child can do that. Maybe you could figure it out. Maybe your child's talking. If you're focusing not on you and how hard it is in the mornings. Nowadays, the mornings are not going to be so much for getting the kids out. They're going to be for getting the kids in order, maybe. Getting them to do some of their schoolwork that's online, hopefully. Getting them ready to talk to grandma and grandpa on Skype or FaceTime, whatever it is. If you set aside your problem that made you maybe yell, you might even remember you yelled before your child does. And you may be able to say, oh, honey, I'm remembering now. I yelled at you this morning. And then your child might cry. Yeah. You'd just be amazed at how this works. And it's so peaceful. There is nothing, hardly a thing on earth as peaceful as knowing your job is to have a loving, good relationship with everyone you deal with, and especially to make sure about it with the ones you love. And especially in this time of coronavirus isolation, it has to be an actual theme. It has to be a stated attitude and theme that you're going to have with the people you love. I'll leave you with some general thoughts. I'm so glad, by the way, to be back with my wonderful audience. I have missed doing this. If you missed the beginning of the show or the video, however you're watching this, we had enough internet problems to stop my radio show for a couple of weeks and just do replays, my radio TV show. The radio show is on PRN-FM. TV show goes up on Dr. Bregan's YouTube channel. It can go up as a part of the Dr. Peter Bregan Hour, can go up as a part of Simple Truths, depending on how the material is going to be used. I'm really, really glad to be talking to all of you again. And keep in mind that a basic principle of mine, you can read about it in Guilt, Shame, and Anxiety, my book, and read about it in Heart of Being Helpful, The Heart of Being Helpful. And that is, if you can maintain a loving sense of yourself, that you are a source of love, if you can remember all times, most of the times, a lot of the time, that you are a source of love, that you can just bring that source up anytime you want. It can be horrible. Things can be going badly. But we as human beings can turn to the person next to us and love them, sometimes more than ever under the duress, and bring your family together. Each of us is a source of love. We have this. That's it. It's a part of us. God-given, I believe. But certainly one can explain a lot of it from the evolution of human beings. By the way, Darwin was not a Darwinian. Darwin said that the highest human achievement was not explainable by physical or social evolution. It was only explainable by reason and love. And that was the golden rule. Do unto others as you would have others do unto you. Now, I think that this talk is about going beyond the golden rule. And you don't just treat others as you would have them treat you. You treat others as they wish and desire. Unless it turns out to be something, a need you can't meet. I mean, in general, it will work well for you to try to understand what other people wish and want, and to try to provide it for them in your relationships. And of course, there'll be times when you disagree. But in general, one of the beauties of love is it erases disagreement, because I'm looking out more for you when I love you than probably for myself. Certainly equally, I hope. And I know Ginger is often looking out for my best needs way ahead of me looking out for my needs. So keep all that in mind. Keep in mind that we can always love one another, and that that is the basis of everything good that we are doing. Thank you for being there, my wonderful audience. Thank you very, very much.